The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Sorry for the late start. Sorry for not being here yesterday. Frog Eyes says, this is an emergency broadcast transmission. Yeah, I guess. My message to you guys tonight is relax, relax, relax. Now, the reason I couldn't be here yesterday and today I'm starting late is I was on a campaign of shopping for a car. And I had to go to dealers, I had to work them hard, I had to drive between them, I had to seek my info, do my research. And wow, doing research and knowing the value of what you have and knowing the value and the margins really help. You can save a lot of money. Because I'm very proud of what I've accomplished today. Now, I have a deal. Everything is signed, so we're good. I'm going to need maybe some breaks in the coming days because I have a lot of paperwork. But Frog Eyes says, yo, new car, JF. I've reached absolute success. And when you reach absolute success in life, you need more than 5 seats to carry your family. And so, you know, the kids have grown. The babies are not babies anymore. They have friends and they want to play at the park. At this point, I have to have 7 seats minimum to carry my task as a dad. And so that's a sign of success. Not when you get the Ferrari, not when you get the Lamborghini, but when you have to get the Dodge Caravan. That is it. I have become a caravan dad. Darko Malfoy says, how old are the clips in the intro video? He hasn't had any guests in years, right? Yeah, I haven't had guests in years. Those are clips that I find show my history on the internet, the things that are big moments. I think it's big that Coach Red Pill was my friend and that he was trusting me in a way that he probably wasn't trusting many people, and he ended up dying in Ukraine. I think that's big. And if you tell me, like, clipping 5 seconds of my life to tell you a little bit about who I am, that 5 seconds is one of them. The 5 seconds with Richard Spencer, our discussion with Richard Spencer, our discussions with Semi Ogog. In many ways, the shows we've done with Semi Ogog were pre-science. This guy is so in advance of his time that you could watch his commentary of back then and just consider it the news of the week, and consider it the current structure of the relationship between Russia, Trump. And so, yes, I clipped these things from a long time past, but that still bear relevance. And one of the beautiful way I find you can clip something is if you clip it out of context, but it's still in context. You clip it out of context, but holy shit, it tells you even more about the current times. Anyways, we'll be talking about the Israeli strike on Iran. But let me just lay out, because we have a lot of things to talk about. First, I wanted to do this show chilling. I wanted to do this show talking about Lord of the Rings. Let's cancel this. Let's talk about Lord of the Rings later. But I think we have to do a complete show. I have to do a more major show, not a chill show, but an analysis show on Lord of the Rings, because I've been watching two of the three movies now. Of course, those movies, I had watched them before. The trilogy, of course, and Bilbo the Hobbit. But I've rewatched them recently, and there is subversion going on. This whole Palantir, Peter Thiel idea that the elves are the Jews. Fuck this bullshit. Fuck this bullshit. You guys are inserting things that are contrary to Tolkien's intent, to because you have a problem of misperception of whatever it is that led these people to start claiming that the elves are the Jews. Fuck you. You are a liar. You lie to yourself. You lie to everyone to lead to a fundamental misunderstanding of Lord of the Rings. Anyway, I don't even want to... We can't talk about Lord of the Rings today because Israel is striking on Iran. And people are like, oh, this is World War III. Now the markets are falling down. Listen, guys. My message tonight is World War III isn't happening. If World War III starts like this, please someone kill me, because holy shit, do we like the plumes of smoke are coming out of Iran. Pew, pew. Little residential buildings are falling. This is not a World War III strike. This is a fucking stupid provocation, just pure provocation by Israel that's currently happening. And I call bullshit. I call bullshit on those people who say the elves are the Jews in Lord of the Rings. I call bullshit on the idea that this is World War III. I call bullshit on the markets that are fake falling right now. This is, you're all being subverted by fucking crap and the idiots on the social media. Oh, this is the beginning. Oh, this is how it all began. No, nothing is beginning today. It's the stupid strike, the stupidest, probably the stupidest military strike I've ever seen in my life. Frog Eyes says Orc Lives Matter. Sneed for Life says Nick Frontes thinks it's significant. I will forgive Nick because Nick is an intelligent man. but what I have that Nick doesn't have is a Dodge Caravan, okay? I have the dirty wisdom of the tired man that Nick doesn't have. And what I would tell to Nick is don't focus too much, because yes, we were all waiting for the day Israel would strike Iran openly. That day has happened. Now, these strikes are insignificant from a tactical perspective. What we know of the targets is that these targets, first, they look like inside Tehran. Apparently, there is an airfield within Tehran that would have been struck. Okay. That qualifies as a strategic target, but those are not nuclear facilities. What we see is damage to residential buildings, and what does that mean? Combined with the public statements of Netanyahu and the Israeli government, they say that they are striking Iran's nuclear facilities. But when you're a retarded country, what is your nuclear facility? It's the fucking intern that's making an internship at the local chemistry lab of the University of fucking Tehran. So you end up having an Israeli missile getting and just blowing up a residential building in which presumably 300, 500, 1,000 people were living, just because there was an intern in there that could have become one day a nuclear engineer. This is the mentality of the preventive strike. Now, Israel has just stretched the concept of a preemptive strike to places where even the dirty military, pro-warmongering American government at times as not their doing. This idea that I'm going to kill 300 people because there is one person in this building that is part of the political elite of Iran or could become an engineer. That is what we're being fed here. This idea that it's a preventive strike because Iran doesn't build nuclear weapons right now, but it could. And if it could in the future, what would be the nuclear facilities of today? It would be the fucking intern that's sleeping in this 300 persons residential building. So this strike doesn't put Iran in even a need to respond position, other than, of course, they will have to make the case to their local population that we're doing something about this. They will have to make that case. This could be done through what they usually do. What they usually do is salvos of meaningless missiles that don't strike anything significant. That is the usual Iranian response. And this is why I want to take you through why I don't think World War III is beginning today. Okay? So, Iran will be obligated in front of its people to say we're doing something about it. But what has been neutralized here? A percentage of an undeveloped country's political elite, a percentage of an undeveloped country's airfields, maybe a little bit of material. This does not disable Iran in any way. The Iran of tomorrow is as strong as the Iran of yesterday, which is not so strong, but this is to show you the meaninglessness of the strike. Let's have a look at the plumes of smoke and presumably where they came from. Those were the first images that came from the strike tonight. Okay, a location in a highly populated area. This is not a nuclear site. This is not a nuclear site. If there was anything nuclear happening there, it was a bunch of students just playing in little vials and stuff. This is a highly populated Tehran, maybe the airfield of Tehran at best. We have here other pictures, so plumes of smoke coming in the back. Very hard to tell what was struck on these pictures. Now we start having close-up pictures. And what do we see? Civilian apartment building collapsed in Tehran following Israeli strike. So you bombed a building with, 20 floors? How many people were in this building? Why would you target this building? Because you know one person, two persons. You know, the government is renting apartments to students or politicians in there. Why would you strike a building of this nature and claim it's a preventive attack on nuclear facilities? Absolute bullshit. And this is so dirty. We've not seen this by advanced nations before. We've not seen this. I mean, we've seen the U.S. just carpet bomb Iraq, but there's something about carpet bombing that is almost more honorable than this. This looks like a very, very cheap provocation attack. This doesn't look like a tactical, intelligent attack. This is the problem. Now, the argument of the Americans when they bombed the campaign of bombing of Iraq, and go back and look at the videos. It's like you see a whole city explode, every square inch of it. There is not a meter of the city that doesn't get blown up. But there was an argument for these strikes. It was the shock and awe strategy. It was like, well, we need to strike a little harder then we really need to first to make sure that everything is dead in there, and second to kind of shock the country into not resisting. Now, this is not shock and awe. It's actually the opposite. It's stupidity and fucking ignorance. And it's stretching of the concept of a preventive strike to degrees that the white mind cannot even conceive. You have to be Jewish to because today they're the Zionists on Twitter, they're so happy. Oh, Israel is striking Iran. Ha! There will not be any nuclear facility left of Iran. This is what you side with, by the way. This was a nuclear facility? A civilian apartment building. Sneed for Life says, is new king even more honorable? Well, I would argue yes. Because you nuke on the argument that your demonstration of force will be so strong and so non-humane that you will actually, down the line, save human suffering. Now, you can accept this argument or not, but this makes sense from a game theoretic perspective. What doesn't make sense from a game theoretic perspective is to just send a couple of missiles into the capital of a city while peace discussions are happening and while the president of the US is asking for everyone across the world and seems to be working very hard to get peace. Now, this has been in the works for a long time. It's been for months we've heard Trump say, well, if they don't accept not to have uranium, they're going to be struck hard. They're going to be struck hard. And it was very clear that Trump was basically not saying that America will strike hard onto Iran, but that Israel will, with the kind of benediction of Trump. Now, Israel tonight is saying this will be a multi-day campaign of bombing, and that at the end of these few days where they will be bombing, there will be no nuclear facility left for Iran. So what is tonight? Is it a salvo of opening? Is it Israel that doesn't really know where to strike? Is it a neutralization of very communication-based and radar-based facilities so that they can strike further down the line? We're not being told much about this, and I don't see a point in the way these strikes are being made for now. Now, is Israel a grand strategic ally that I underestimate, and we will see the sense of it all, and we will see peace arise from this in a week or two from now, as they claim? I highly doubt, because these strikes seem designed to just brew shit. Those are shit brewing strikes. They are strikes designed for Iran to be stuck in, I need to respond in some form, even if they don't want to, even if the damage doesn't seem massive for now. It seems like random. Like, wow, you killed 300 of my citizens. Who care in an undeveloped country? 300 citizens is worth nothing to them. Maybe in that 300 you had an important high-level person of the government. Even that is not that grave. Maybe you had an engineer that maybe would have worked in a nuclear facility. Then you've just sent the message to the other engineers. Live underground. You're not safe in a high-rise residential building. Silver Spider sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, hey, JF, I got Moliner to rant at me for 20 minutes / call me low IQ for asking how we can persuade people that zero-sum game effects of the free market are not coercion using UPB. He was very upset. I'm one of the few people in the world who can understand your sentence right there. Well, thank you for going to trigger Molyneux. Yes. This is a point that you've probably learned from me, because I remember making these points. Wow, that was early in my career. So it's the idea that, you know, the libertarian delusion is that, well, you know, just let others develop wealth. You're going to be fine. Just develop your own wealth, bro. What does it matter that he's getting employed? Just go do your own. Make your own bank. Make your own employment. Make your own jobs. And it works to an extent. In a growing civilization, the libertarian delusion happens to be true. But it's not a fundamental principle of civilization. In fact, I would argue the parasitic nature of civilization will always come back to bite, which is that, hey, I wanted to feed you. But now there's McDonald's that shows up and they have their burger and they decide who they hire, and they don't want to hire you for X reason. If you want to help them, if you want to take the libertarian through their hand and help them understand, make up a bad reason. Let's say McDonald's doesn't want to employ you because you're white. And let's say that it's because of some DEI thing that they have chosen willfully. That is, they are not forced by the government to do DEI employments, but they're doing it. Now you'll realize something, which is that there's only place for one burger flipper. And that can be taken from you, and in a way that makes it unavailable to you. This position in society, this way to live. I flip burger, I come home, I get a check every Thursday. That's an ecological niche. And it's not true that that there is an infinite set of possible alternate route that you could take to survive. At some point, there are too many people controlling too much of the system and trying to kick you out, trying to not hire you or not engage in business with you. And you might as well be dead then, because when the local shop doesn't want to deal with you, when you're rejected from society, I mean, in a way, that's a path that thinkers take. I cannot be employed at McDonald's. No way. And yet, why? I'm probably a better burger flipper than any of the local McDo staff. I can flip better the burger, but they will never hire me. And that shows that there is a zero-sum game, that there is a limit to the free world. It cannot create infinite positions. Silver Spider says, it's funny how he said it was a low IQ question, but yes, I learned this concept from you. It is not a low IQ question, because you and I can be discussing this because we both know what we're talking about, but it is a very hard concept to grasp, that there is finite ecological niches and therefore that all games are zero sum. This is the radical conclusion. The little example of the burger flipper of McDo is just a micro instance of it. Now, when you realize that the whole world is made of this, it will drive your local libertarian fucking crazy. Because then there's no argument for, like, then the world is just about viruses trying to exist and trying to out-chew the other viruses. And you are one of them. Anyways, let's go back to Iran. Sagar Enjati says, Israel has now made a mockery of the United States. President Trump today said he did not want strikes ahead of negotiations scheduled for tomorrow, and they did it anyways. Their attack today is deliberate sabotage and a blatant attempt to force us into war. We must resist. Yes, and I hope, I kind of trust, because Trump has been very good lately. Trump has been very good. Trump has been playing on the fence between the powers of Russia and Ukraine. I hope to see a Trump who can take the bombings of tonight and revert and put them back in the face of Israel. Now, where Trump is, Trump has some ease into playing the fence game in Russia-Ukraine. Can he do this in Israel-Iran? Can he do this under the full pressure of the Israeli Jewish lobby? That is the question. I'm willing to think that perhaps Trump can. I think it's exciting. I think he may be. Now, he may also be so bound to his funding interest that he's just going to bash onto Iran and help Israel do it. But it would be beautiful to see a Trump that starts calling out Israel. Why this strike? Why? Because he's been doing it on Putin and on Zelensky. He's been saying that both sides at times have acted crazy. Can Trump do this for Iran? I don't know. Can he find in himself the force to speak back to Israel and say, hey, that wasn't smart? That would be absolutely beautiful. Whether it happens or not, though, this is not the beginning of World War III. And it would be only the beginning of World War III if there was an interest in Iran in counter-escalation. And let me tell you, it's very easy to think, oh, well, Iran will do something. But again and again, we have been shown that Iran is not an advanced nation. They take the missiles like you know, these brutal boxer that you can see are not particularly smart, but they can take a punch to the jaw and just continue boxing. And they'll be a little bit shaken by the punch, but they're kind of like zombie boxers. It's a special kind of boxer that's not particularly tactical, not particularly smart, but they can take hits. And I think that undeveloped nations, in a way, they're designed that way. And it's not random. It's how it happens. An undeveloped nation losing a couple of civilians to a very poorly made Israeli bombing, I don't think they are that incentivized at responding in force. They want to keep the face for sure, and they will. But what we've seen before is, oh, we will strike some Israeli associated locations in the Middle East. They send salvos of stupid missiles that don't touch anything, that don't target anything. And after these salvos of missile that are shown to have hit no targets at all, they say, we have had our revenge. Now we're done. Like, they literally close up the possibility that they would even send more. Now, maybe one day Iran will have more technological capabilities. And the only situation in which you could have a worldwide escalation of something with Iran is if other powers got into it. Now you'd be talking. If China starts saying, hey, we don't like seeing what's happening with Iran here, we're going to get into it, or Russia, same thing, then you would have something. Then you would have a potential escalation into a nuclear situation. But what has happened tonight is provocation, political provocation. See how the Israeli government was framing it. Israel launches preemptive strikes on Iran. U.S. says it was not involved. Israel has launched what it calls preemptive strikes against Iran, with explosions reported across Tehran and fires in high-rise buildings. Defense Minister Israel Katz declared a state of emergency warning of an expected missile and drone attack on Israel. A U.S. official told CNN there was no American involvement or assistance in the Israeli strikes. Iranian state media reported repeated explosions in the capital, with possible strikes targeting Iranian military and political leadership. If anything has been accomplished in some fine way tonight by Israel, it is they've targeted people that they didn't like in the Iranian leadership. Now, the problem with this is it's at the border, it's at the edge between war, legitimate war, and really regime change targets, because if you eliminate one by one the politicians you don't like in another country, that country will naturally adopt a different political direction. Now, this is what seems to have happened tonight, given the targeting of residential areas, given that Tehran is targeted, given that I don't see any nuclear facility yet that has been even attempted to be struck. So we're talking about regime change at a distance. And I don't think it's going to be particularly efficient, because I don't think they will have struck enough of the leadership to change the political direction of Iran. So it's really just vengeful killing of people to violate the sovereignty of a nation. Because when you cross the border between legitimate war and killing the politicians on the other side that you don't like, you cross the border of interference with legitimate sovereignty of another nation. Does Iran have the right to say, I don't like this Israeli politician, let's target strike his residential building? No. Once you are in this, you are in regime change. You're just doing regime change as a coward at a distance. Whereas in the 60s and 70s, at least, regime change was a ground game. We were sending these CIA agents all across the world to try to take on other nations. It was stupid to do so, but we were doing it. But doing it with remote commands is especially ridiculous. Doubting Thomas says, JF, how in the world can this end up deterring Iran from seeking a nuclear weapon by any means? Exactly. So if you're talking about long-term effects, you are simply creating a legitimate justification for Iran to want a nuclear weapon. Because if you start being bombarded like this, okay, you can take the damage in. But what if Israel does this tomorrow? What if Israel does this for a whole year? Then your country is in ruins. So the natural reaction of Iran to this will be, if they follow it, if they have the balls to follow it, will naturally be to want more nuclear protection. And that may take that may be Iran developing really strike-resistant nuclear programs underground, as they are believed to have done to some extent. Or it may just mean stronger alliance with powers that can provide this kind of weapon. Because in the end, this is what I've been saying about World War III. Iran having the nuclear weapon for themselves doesn't matter that much. Because once they attain the making of a nuclear bomb, it will likely be Pakistan-level nuclear bombs. So we're talking Hiroshima strength levels of nuclear bombs. Now, people are saying, Hef, I'm sure I will be reconnecting. I'm sure that we will be coming back live because I seem to be still streaming. Sorry for the sudden disappearance. Let's see if 10 seconds does it. Lord of Sigma says they got the interception code. So even if Iran comes to enrich uranium to the point of making these basic nuclear bombs, we're talking about basic nuclear bombs that are five times the strength of Hiroshima. And we're talking about how are you going to send these nuclear bombs to a developed nation? Because a developed nation will see it coming and will be able most likely to neutralize it. So then you need hypersonics. And ultimately, down the line, what truly matters are the most advanced nations and their nuclear capacity, like Russia, capable of equipping with the, some of the most powerful known nuclear bombs, 100, 1,000 times Hiroshima, and on a hypersonic missile that you can't stop. This is the game of World War III. I don't see the game of World War III being played tonight. And so I think that the market reaction is actually so exaggerated that this may all be a market bluff, a market play. Now, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe in 2 weeks from now, you know what? In 2 weeks from now, if we're in World War III, you can come back to me and say, JF, you lack vision. You lack the ability to see things. But I don't see it. I don't see it in these provocative strikes. I don't see a existential threat to the Iranian nation that will escalate into a nuclear conflict. Okay, so people are back. Sneed for Life says, refreshed, fixed it eventually. You have to see this as a proportion of what is being destroyed, and knowing the resilience of undeveloped nations, everyone is replaceable, even political power, even low-level engineers that they have, that they do have. I don't see... And what I would say to Nick Fuentes is, maybe you got too excited at the news. You know, we look at the news so much. We live in Twitterverse. Just relax, Nick. Relax. You're gonna come to see. You're gonna come to see how very small that is all. And Trump, with one word, one way or another, can completely change the direction of what's going on there. And in fact, could very well bring the world toward a more durable peace, one in which it seems that the current Israeli discourse is trying to lay the grounds to claim in 7 days from now or 4 days from now, we have destroyed the Iranian nuclear capabilities. And it looks like it's what they're going to do. They're going to strike little strikes here and there. And then they're going to say, that's it. We have destroyed the capacity of Iran to enrich uranium. I don't think it will be true. And I don't think it will be durable. But I think the problem is when you lock yourself into that position. Tonight, Israel has locked itself into a position. Either Iran has great enrichment capabilities that are super dangerous for everyone, or it doesn't. Either Israel is a competent country capable of annihilating these facilities, or it's not.
Doomsday Box for JF.
Well, thank you so much. It feels so good that even if the world falls and we are headed to World War III, and I'm about to be conscripted in the Canadian Army to join Israel against Iran, it's good to know that I have $40 here I can count on to at least get a good lunch before the fall. Rock and DSL points out Iran has over 80 million population. Yes, those are countries where human life is cheap, bro. This is one of the important things you have to realize. Human life is cheap, replaceable, especially in these overpopulated countries. What Israel is locking itself into is they're going to have to do a report to the world about what has happened 7 days down the line. What happened, Israel? Are you satisfied by your strike? They're going to have to respond yes or no. They're going to have a position on the success of their strike. And that position can either be, there were uranium enrichment facilities and we destroyed them, or we're so incompetent that we have no capacity to actually destroy the uranium enrichment facilities of an undeveloped nation. And I don't think there's any winning game for Israel down this line. So that's why tonight not only is not worrying to me, but it's kind of ridiculous that Israel put himself out of its nervousness, out of its Jewish psychosis, this Jewish nervousness and expectations of others, and we have to act in 6D moves all the time and in advance of everyone. You ended up here showing weakness in a strike, and it's not looking good down the line for Israel. It's looking like Israel is endorsing strikes against civilians. They've been doing it on Gaza, a victimized population. Now, victimized populations, it's one thing. For some reason, it doesn't bring that much sympathy, although it does in the young American public. But to be attacking the sovereignty of another nation, the problem here is you open up a mirroring game. Down the line, who in the world, except a rabid Zionist, would complain if Iran did the same to Israel? Let's say that Iran acquires more precise strike capabilities, or let's say they just delegate it to their ally, Russia, or to their ally, China, or to their ally, whoever benefits from their relationship with Iran. What happens then? Well, then Iran would strike Israel, and I wouldn't give a shit, and there would be residential buildings falling. And who would be so double standard, so dishonest with themselves, that they could criticize the Iranian action, but not criticize tonight the Israeli action? Well, it's going to be a handful of people, and they are called the Jews. Ruth Sternwood says, Iranian kids did human wave attacks through minefields in the war versus Iraq. Yes, another case of human life is cheap. So that's what I had to say tonight. Just relax, and no, I don't think that we're headed toward a war economy where the stock market crashes by 50%. I think we are in a fake out. We are in a fake out. People are fake. People are stupid. The Twitterettis are retarded. Fuck all of them. I go against the grain here. I go even against a man I truly respect in Nick Fuentes. And I say, don't participate to the mob. They don't think for themselves. They see a couple of fireworks and they already get excited. Nothing ever happens, bro. Nothing ever happens. So that's what I had to say. That's it. That's pretty much it for tonight. I had started some discussion about the world, the Lord of the Ring characters, because I wanted to shoot the shit tonight, but it ended up that an event that needed coverage happened. So I don't know that I feel particularly excited now that this has happened to be talking about Lord of the Rings and what all these characters mean. But what I will say in short is I believe that the Palantir people and Curtis Yarvin have been, they've been on an enterprise of subversion of the work of Tolkien in a way that is clearly, to me, deceptive about what Tolkien meant. They have been trying to frame the idea that the elves are the Jews, that it's natural, and that the humans are the dwarves, and that the dwarves are better farmed by elves, that the dwarves are better They have better society. Humans have better society. Whites have better societies. When they let themselves be controlled by dark elves and white elves. I think this is so contrary to Tolkien's intent that I will make a long show, long analysis on this in the days to come. Because I think it's important to reappropriate Tolkien, Lord of the Ring, from a Christian perspective. Because Lord of the Ring sweats Christianity. You know, Frodo is a martyr. He is a martyr that has to carry a cross. The cross just happens to be a ring. And the way he has to get into the mountain of lava, the mountain of evil, Mordor, Sauron, he has to basically carry with goodness. He has to carry with goodness evil, and he has to throw evil into evil in throwing the rings into lava. So to me, that's a very Jesus Christ-like, and I have no doubt that Tolkien was literally just inspired by the Bible in many ways. The elves are not Jews. In fact, if you look historically what Tolkien has said, it's very likely that the dwarves are Jews, because you have to put yourself back in the times when Tolkien wrote this. Anyway, do you think that Tolkien had, let's say that Tolkien was in an anti-Semitic environment to an extent, and he had a bigoted mind of his time? Now, a bigoted mind of his time wouldn't have taken the Jews being an anti-Semite and saying, I'm going to put them as the most fair, beautiful race of people who live forever, who are like stunningly fair and white and blonde and racially pure. That is not the vision of a Jew in the time of Tolkien. But the greediness of the dwarves, the fact that the dwarves are so interested in just one thing, and it's gold. Now, that legitimately qualifies as an old vision of what a Jew was. So we'll go through this, but I'm discovering more and more about the structure of Lord of the Rings, which I had read, of course, when I was... It was in high school. I remember doing this French class on Bilbo the Hobbit. I must have been 13 years old, 14 years old, maybe. And I had read through these. I also had read through the Dritz Duhurdun Forgotten Realms saga. So Dark Elves, I know. One of my favorite series of book was about a dark elf, Dritz Duhurdun. And I'm ready for a reanalysis as an adult now. And as I see the subversion that's been happening by Curtis Yarvin, we must have a counter-narrative. We must understand Tolkien properly, historically, and based on the statements that he's actually done, because Tolkien has given us so much that we know what he had in mind. We know what he had in mind when he did The Lord of the Rings. Now, I'm looking through The Two Towers, the second movie. And tonight, in fact, I'll get to the third movie. And The Two Towers is very interesting from a literary experimental perspective, because The Two Towers is really a study of the binary in literary narrative. There's two towers, Sauron and Saruman. Saruman is the... And by the way, Saruman, if someone qualifies as Jewish in Lord of the Rings, it would be Saruman. In a quest to power, putting himself as a counselor of the powerful Sauron, thinking that because he has acquired this counselor position, he acquires powers himself, but he's really being fooled by the Chad Sauron. If there would be a character that I would assign to Jews, it would certainly be Saruman. Now, The Two Towers, what's interesting to me about it is everything is about tensions between two poles. And Tolkien really went into binary interaction. A brother loving a brother. Everything goes well between the two brothers. They are fighting side by side. But suddenly a father arrives. And so those are not even the characters that the term Two Towers refers to. Two Towers refers to Saruman and Sauron. But within the movie Two Towers, I've laid out at least 10 binary relationships where, okay, that's two brothers, see? And the Lady of Rohan that falls in love with Aragorn versus the elf that falls in love with Aragorn, that's two women. So you have two towers, two brothers, two women. You have two of everything. And so... I believe that Tolkien was playing a game of binary here and putting pairs. And see, this pair of brothers, they respect each other. They fight together. One wins, the other wins too. But then you put their father comes in and divides the binary. And it's like, you always do what I say. You never succeed. You always fail. And suddenly the relationship between two brothers splits. So that's the kind of thing I'm currently noting. I'm currently shaping my and of course what is the big binary of Two Towers? It's not even Sauron and Saruman that much. It is Gollum and Sméagol, two consciousness within the same person. So Two Towers was a play on binaries, and I will show this in my long analysis when we get to it. Sneed for Life says, Jeff, do you like Family Guy? I can't say that I've studied it enough, that I've watched enough. I have never watched a whole episode of Family Guy. The most I have seen of Family Guy were clips of less than 10 seconds. I literally do not. it's not my generation. I'm an old man. Homer Simpson to me is the Family Guy. I don't know about these new things. Like who's this guy? The cartoon, the propane tank guy. I've never watched his stuff. The propane tank guy who drinks beer. To me, Homer Simpson is the only male character of that type. I've never accepted Family Guy. I've never accepted Hank Hill. Yeah, Hank Hill. I'm just from another generation. Sorry. Richard Leon says, Jeff, in the intro, you should add a clip of you saying, the anus's function is to shit. Right after you say, let's talk about science. Well, okay, but did I ever say this? Maybe, because I've said a lot of things across the years. I've been live 1 hour a day. Maybe I've said this before. The anus's function is to shit. That sounds... I agree. I agree. Doubting Thomas sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, as a neurologist, what do you think is the most likely cause of the multiple reports of Havana syndrome? Is it truly psychogenic, stealth use of RF, MW, radiation beams, or something else? I have no insight, but I'm super interested in this question. I have no insight. Because the theory, the basic theory, I guess maybe, would it qualify as a conspiracy theory? Maybe. The basic theory is because you have these people who are politicians or they're press conference people. They do a speech and they fall ill with a couple of symptoms that are called the Havana syndrome. And literally, there's two hypotheses and I have no clue which one is true. But it's hilarious because the first theory is there's Russian agents living among us. They have developed a super powerful focused weapon of waves. And they they point their gun, their wave guns at you, and they can be fully hidden. They can be even behind walls, but they zap your brain with microwave radiations, and you go full Havana syndrome. And that's one of the hypotheses for the Havana syndrome. You are being targeted by basically an open sky microwave that's shooting your brain because it wants to. They want to neutralize you politically, or you've been hanging too much into South America because you're a press conference political person, and you are just shitting yourself out of the fucking medieval bacteria that you caught there. That is the second hypothesis. And I have no clue. I have no clue. Is it because... Yeah, maybe press conference puts you in a nervous state. You know, we've seen these nurses in the vaccine COVID-19 days. Some nurses were falling. They were falling. You could argue that perhaps they have suffered some form of Havana syndrome. They were losing consciousness in front of vaccines that had never been a problem to them. But suddenly, everyone was more nervous around COVID. Everyone was more nervous around this vaccine. And they had to speak publicly. Poof. They fell. Now, is it possible that it's a combination of worldwide traveling exposing you to intestinal bacteria that you're not used to? You catch some kind of diarrhea and you speak publicly. So you're like, I don't want to shit my pants. And that gives you Havana syndrome. I think the two theories are equally plausible. But I'm super interested. I have no idea which one is true. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you so much for your support. I don't know in the coming days. I had to cancel an interview to tomorrow. I'm sorry to the guys, but I just have some paperwork to deal with that... I have to travel. I don't know when I'll be ready. So I don't know if there'll be a show tomorrow. But in any case, don't worry. I'm setting up things that are super important in life. And then I'm sure that by Monday, Tuesday, and in fact, I will be giving the interview on Saturday. But I'll be back to a full-time schedule. No problem. I'm in good shape. I love life, but I have these things to deal with. Bye-bye.